homes, businesses, and transportation on Long Island's South Fork are vulnerable to rising sea levels. That's according to consultants for the town of East Hampton. They were hired to create a draft of the town's Coastal Assessment Resiliency Plan and examined how extreme weather and coastal erosion could impact flooding in low-lying communities like Montauk. Kevin McAllister is the founder of the environmental group Defend H2O. As a resident of East Hampton, he says the town needs to act fast with prevention measures before it becomes too late.
The longer we wait, the more costly and difficult it will be to really execute climate change adaptation.
The plan recommends beach restoration and engineered solutions to mitigate flooding. It also recommends policies to incentivize a managed retreat of development away from shorelines. The plan report is not a legislative document, but it is intended to be a handbook for town officials to craft ways to mitigate the realities of sea level rise. Happy Monday. You're listening to After All Things, WSHU's daily news update from the Connecticut, New York region. One out of six jobs in Connecticut state government remain unfilled. Bus ridership in the state is showing some improvement, and the causes and consequences of rising healthcare costs. That and more to come. I'm Sabrina Garone. One out of six jobs in the Connecticut state government remain unfilled, according to a new audit from State Comptroller Natalie Broswell. WSHU's Mike Lyle reports thousands of more state workers are also planning on retiring by this summer.
Broswell's office says that nearly 4,000 employees across state government have either retired this calendar year or will do so by July 1st. Figures from the Office of Policy and Management indicate that executive branch agencies have filled nearly 26,000 of their 30,000 positions that were allocated for in the state budget. Labor advocates say the pandemic is a reason for the job decline. Right now, the state's 17% vacancy rate is nearly double the percentage from the height of the pandemic in 2020. State officials say they are working to fill jobs, especially in caregiver and information technology positions. Mike Lyle, WSHU News.
Bus ridership in Connecticut has almost returned to pre-pandemic levels. According to new data collected by the Department of Transportation, WSHU's Davis Donovan reports.
Governor Ned Lamont made state buses free through June 30th to counter high gas prices and bring back riders who left during the pandemic. This includes state buses and local buses in some cities like Hartford, Stamford, and New Haven. Stamford's local ridership is back up to 90% of its pre-pandemic levels, according to the Department of Transportation. Hartford and New Haven's local riders have come back at almost the same levels, but only about 20% of riders on the state's express bus service have returned. The DOT told Hearst Connecticut Media that they'll do ridership studies after the free bus period ends to understand how effective the strategy really was. Davis Donovan, WSHU News.
Connecticut small businesses are feeling the effects of rising healthcare costs. More on that to come after headlines and a message from our supporter.
Support for After All Things comes from Hartford HealthCare. More COVID vaccine answers at hartfordhealthcare.org/vaccine or 833-621-0600.
New York State's primary elections for Congress and State Senate have been pushed back to August 23rd. A judge ordered this change late on Friday. Other primary elections will still be held in late June. This includes races for governor and state assembly, but the judge did not vote that the state legislature could move the date to coincide with the August primary. New York's highest court threw out the congressional and state Senate maps. It ruled that they were gerrymandered to favor the Democrats. A third-party expert has been charged with redrawing the lines by May 20th. Unionized workers at Pratt & Whitney's Connecticut plants have approved a 3-year contract. The 3,000 members of the International Association of Mechanics approved the contract on Sunday. It covers workers at the company's East Hartford and Middletown plants. The contract takes effect today. It improves job security language, includes annual raises, and more vacation and personal time. The town of Southold on Long Island's North Fork is taking steps to address a years-long deer and tick problem with hunting. According to a North Fork Deer Management Coalition, Southold Town is home to an estimated 6 to 10 times more deer than the local ecosystem can sustain, which has been known to increase the spread of tick-borne illness. A town board announced plans to work with the state on a pilot program to get the area's deer population to a manageable and sustainable level. The program would create a professional deer culling program in the town and impose less limitations on recreational hunters.
This is Long Story Short from the Connecticut Mirror and WSHU Public Radio. I'm Ebong Udama. You can read the stories we feature at ctmirror.org or wshu.org. Erica Phillips is Connecticut Mirror's economic development reporter. She joins us to talk about her article titled "Rising Healthcare Costs Weigh on Connecticut Small Businesses and Nonprofits." It's the first of a two-part series examining the causes and consequences of rising healthcare costs. Hello, Erica. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So healthcare costs are rising, and more so for small businesses. You give the example of a small church in Manchester. Could you tell us more about this church?
Sure. So this is the Unitarian Universalist Church in Manchester. You know, they want to make a point to provide health insurance to their employees. They think that's, you know, part of their mission, part of what they want to do as an organization. But that's becoming just more and more difficult as the premiums for health insurance grow. And they only have a staff of 6 people, and only 3 of those people are actually on health insurance. And even so, it takes up about 10% of their budget.
So why are healthcare premiums going up? And what role does hospital consolidation have on this?
So yeah, hospital consolidation is part of it, but there are a lot of reasons that health insurance costs are going up. And a lot of that has to do with healthcare costs, just the cost to provide healthcare is going up. There's also aspects involving, you know, government requirements. So additional things, according to the insurers, that have cost more on the insurance side. But on the healthcare the actual healthcare side, costs are going up, if that makes sense. So things like pharmaceutical costs, just labor, obviously the pandemic has contributed to that. There's been, you know, the hospital cited inflation as part of the reason costs are going up. But there's this big component of it, which is in Connecticut and in a lot of markets, hospitals are merging, hospitals are acquiring physician practices, and they're gaining more control of the markets in which they operate. And it's making what researchers call, it's making the markets not work very well.
They're not as competitive as they would be if there were more players in the market.
There you go, exactly. So that's the theory that a lot of researchers have been looking into and have been finding, yes, is the case. When hospitals merge, prices for the care that they offer tend to go up.
Now, the government has been trying to do something about this. I know that Governor Lamont has talked about it, you know, and they've had different policies about prescription drugs, etc. What exactly is the governor doing? And is it possible that anything can be done to reduce the rise in premiums?
So one of the things that all the parties involved here say is that there just needs to be more data. There needs to be more transparency. And there already is a heck of a lot of data if you go out and look. And that's a good thing. There's more and more available to us. Hearst actually published a story a few days ago where you can compare the prices for various procedures across the state. So that was pretty cool. That's made possible by the availability of this data. What the officials in the administration want to do is something called benchmarking. So they're going to say, year to year, healthcare costs cannot grow by more than this set percentage. And we're going to track all of the data in all the various healthcare providers across the state. And if anyone exceeds that cost growth benchmark, we're going to hold a public hearing and we're going to ask them why. So there's a lot going on, and a lot of it is in an attempt to keep the growth of costs down. But we're still at a point where, you know, we'll see how it works out.
Now, Governor Lamont just last week was pushing a bill that, made it through the House and was pending in the Senate. What would that bill do?
What that bill would do would actually codify this benchmark program. So it was originally an executive order. Now they're trying to put it into law and, codify it. So,
now, what role does the Attorney General, and the Office of Health Strategy, what role do they play? Because I know that Attorney General Tong has been talking about looking into hospital consolidations and, keeping an eye on that. What is it that, that could be done as far as the State Attorney General's Office and the Office of Health Strategy?
Yeah, so the two different tracks there. So the Attorney General would theoretically, if he determined that there needed to be legal action taken on a merger, which so far has not happened in Connecticut, but has happened in other states. So when any kind of merger acquisition takes place among businesses, legal officials can theoretically evaluate it and determine whether, no, you know, this is not good for the market. This would create an anti-competitive atmosphere in the market. So in theory, the Attorney General has the ability to prosecute any hospital merger that might result in anti-competitive atmosphere, but in Connecticut has not done so yet. Now, on the side of the Office of Health Strategy, what they're doing is, like I said, sort of gathering the data, keeping track of the activity among hospitals. When hospitals or healthcare providers merge or do any kind of deal, it has to be okayed basically by the Office of Health Strategy through a process called the Certificate of Need. Those hearings are taking place and, ongoing. You can look up, you know, Connecticut Health Certificate of Need, and you can see what has gone on at those hearings, the testimony that's been raised, and so on. So there's a lot happening, and a lot of people keeping an eye on it all.
So how soon can the Unitarian Universalist Society East see a change in the marketplace and make it easier for them to take care of their healthcare, the healthcare needs of their staff?
That's a very good question. Honestly, so the benchmarking process is going on. The you know, in theory, this stuff is getting looked at, but I don't know, the wheels of the legislative process move at their own pace. So I don't know that I have an answer to that question, unfortunately.
Well, Erica, thank you so much. We're looking forward to the second part of your series, which will look into how hospital consolidations are affecting rural Connecticut. Erica Phillips is the economic development reporter for the Connecticut Mirror. Her article is titled "Rising Healthcare Costs Weigh on Connecticut Small Businesses and Nonprofits." Long Story Short comes from WSHU Public Radio and the Connecticut Mirror. Read the story at ctmirror.org or wshu.org. I'm Ebon Udama.
For the latest news from Long Island and Connecticut, you can listen on the radio or online at WSHU.org. After All Things is supported by Hartford HealthCare. Thank you so much for listening and for sharing this podcast with your friends. If you like what you hear, you can help us out by becoming a member at WSHU.org. That's all for me today. I'm Sabrina Garone, and we'll talk tomorrow. ¶¶